So today we are going to explore a different side of Disneyland and talk about the alleged haunted stories and some of the tragedies that may have taken place on property.
Hi, welcome to True Creeps,
where the stories are true
and the creeps are real.
We'll cover stories from grotesque gore
to the possibly plausible paranormal,
to horrifying history,
to tense and terrible true crime,
and everything else that goes bump in the night. We're your hosts, Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay, and we want you to join us while we creep.
We cover mature topics. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone. Today, we are going to explore one of the happiest places on Earth, but in a totally different way. So we all know that Disneyland is super busy, exciting, full of history. But did you know that it's also allegedly haunted?
Also, Lawyer Lindsay was like, Amanda, we can't say haunted. I don't want Disney to sue us. So Disney, just in case you're listening, I don't think you are, but just in case, no beef, two paws up, no beef. And just so we're saying it on the record, none of this is malicious.
No.
We're all thinking joy. There's been talk of my 40th birthday being at Disney.
Yes.
Which I've considered, but then my birthday's in August, which I'm like, ooh, that's spicy.
Ooh, yeah. If you do like a late birthday or a very early birthday, then yes.
I'm also a big believer of like the year you turn 40 is the year you do whatever you're going to do to celebrate. It doesn't have to be on your birthday. Because yeah. Don't tie me down to a certain date. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not my fault that I was born when it's hot out.
Yeah. No beef, Disney.
This episode is going to be literally a roller coaster, right? Because we are going to go into some fun history about Disneyland. And a lot of it I didn't know about, mm-hmm. even though I've been there so many times. I did not know all of this. We're going to talk about the alleged hauntings and what some people have experienced there. And then we're going to kind of go downhill here. And we're going to talk about some of the tragedies that have happened there. And I've heard of some, and funny enough, one of the ones that I thought was real that actually like made me second guess things sometimes was mm-hmm. not real.
So you're like, I uncovered an urban legend.
Yes, yes. That makes me feel a little bit better, I guess. But we're going to talk about a lot of Disney. Yeah. So let's start with the history. It does have a lot of history to a theme park, which, I mean, it's been around for a while, right? So a lot of people have been there.
Also just like Disney itself, right? And I feel like they're so intertwined.
Mm-hmm. And everyone knows a Disney movie or has seen a Disney movie. But we're going to focus on some of the basic details to its history. Disneyland, and we're talking about Disneyland in Anaheim, not Disney World in Florida. But Disneyland is in Anaheim, California. And it was the first theme park designed and built under Walt Disney's supervision. And it opened on July 17th of 1955. His vision was to create a clean, immersive park.
Look, I'm just going to cut in so quickly. I would love to tell you that I'm going to say Disneyland in this episode. I'm going to say Disney World at some point. When I mean Disneyland, I'm using them interchangeably this episode. I'm going to try my best.
But you've lived in Florida, so when you think of a Disney park, you probably go to Disney World, right?
Like, I did my time in Florida, but also I'm on the East Coast. So, like, Disney yeah. World is like the Disney's theme park to me. I forget Disneyland exists.
See, and yeah, I grew up in California, so Disneyland yeah. is.
You're like, that's the one.
And I'm sure that there's some fun stories we can explore for Disney World as well. But
yeah, I feel like we could do another one, because for Disney adults, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Disneyland was built on 160 acres of former orange groves. It took about 2 decades of planning and cost about $17 million to build, which is $205,600,000 in today's monies.
And I would even venture to guess that that's just like strict like money inflation. With the cost of materials and labor and everything else, I would say like so much more.
Yeah.
Because even just like the land, the cost of everything, etc., mm-hmm. etc., definitely higher.
Yeah, for sure. This I thought was crazy. It was open 1 year and 1 day after construction began.
Woof, that's fast.
That's a quick turnaround for such like a big place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, something that I think I'd seen little like pieces of this, but opening day was a complete shit show behind the scenes. And it was broadcast live on TV. Luckily, I don't think anything on TV spotted the craziness unfolding, but construction and painting continued until right up to the start of the broadcast. So they were like, to the minute, finishing this park. It's estimated that 70 million people, and the country had only about 165 million at the time, tuned in to watch the opening broadcast, which was co-hosted by future President Ronald Reagan.
Interesting. I mean, it is a lot of people watching the thing. It's just interesting that, like, Reagan was on it.
Right. The broadcast went well and allowed people to tour the four areas of the park. So at that time, it was Frontierland, Adventureland, Fantasyland, and Tomorrowland. But the shit show part was that a ton of attractions were actually not ready to operate. It was over 100 degrees, and the asphalt had melted into, like, a sticky tar material.
That's too fucking hot.
So people's, like, shoes and stuff were getting stuck.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Awful. There was a plumber strike, which led to problems with drinking fountains. The Mark Twain riverboat was filled beyond capacity. The park was also filled over capacity due to counterfeit tickets and people scaling the fence. The freeway leading to the park was super backed up. And remember, it was really hot. So, like, being stuck on the freeway was not a fun thing to have happen. And then, because it was so over capacity, the restaurants also ran out of food and refreshments. So just, like, all these things in the background were just completely messed up. And really, I mean, a lot of it is because of overcapacity and it being hot, which no one has. If people are sneaking in, they don't have the way to be ready for that. No one knew it was going to be that big of a hit.
Yeah. I feel like counterfeit tickets, like, weren't as easy probably to spot then. Now we've got QR codes and stuff like that versus, like, then it was, like, printed on things. And I would imagine that they had, I'm not going to act like I understood how tickets work then. What am I, ticketologist?
Scientist, yeah.
Yeah, ticket scientist. You know, I mean, classic ticket scientist. But just, like, tracking how many people were coming in, they probably weren't thinking of anything like that. Like, they knew that Disney was big, but, like, they probably were, like, so big that people are going to lie their way in.
Right. Or scale the walls.
Mm-hmm.
But the opening day is referred to as Black Sunday. And despite all the issues at the beginning, obviously the park was successful. It surpassed 1 million visitors in only 7 weeks. And it hit its 1 billionth visitor in 2024.
Wow. I would think that this is a good point to mention that sometimes we talk about people who have billions of dollars. And what an interesting thing to think of, how impressively busy Disney is pretty much all the time. Mm-hmm. And it took 7 weeks to hit 1 million. But it wasn't until 2024 that it hit a billion. Because that's how big the real difference is between a million and $1 billion.
Yeah.
Right? How interesting to think that someone could amass that type of wealth.
Almost unimaginable.
Almost unimaginable.
Now, Disneyland has grown over the years, right? It's added new lands, and they're always working on new rides, areas, celebrations, just different things to attract people to come to the park. But as we've said before, a place this big, this old, with that many visitors, has the potential of collecting more unseen visitors in addition to the ticket purchasers.
Okay, so let's get into some weird facts and rumors about Disneyland.
Don't sue us.
There are hidden corridors, backstage roads, and many restricted areas guests will never see. If I sound defeated, it's because it took me too many times to say that phrase correctly. So, another interesting fact is that the park is designed so that trash cans can be seen about every 30 feet. And Walt Disney tested how far guests would walk before littering. So it's kind of like, hey, you got 30 steps before they just throw it on the ground. Which, ew.
That makes me so angry.
Litter bugs.
I think that is something, one of my biggest pet peeves is someone throwing trash on the ground. Like, it makes me so angry. And that's probably one day how I'm going to be killed, is, like, confronting someone that throws something out of their car. That's it. Yeah. Or I'm going to try to avoid running over an animal. I accept it.
I can't remember where I was visiting, but it was insert big city. And they had a sign on their city trash cans that said, a sign of a well-loved city is a full trash can. And I thought that was so cute because it was like, yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting that, like, he had to go through and watch and be like, okay, about 30 feet is when they're like, never mind. Rules don't apply.
Yeah. I think that one of the really interesting things about designing things for human is all of the kind of work, like, that goes into it. How many feet will you walk around a field before you just cut through it? You know, and things like that. That's always very fascinating to me. So, another interesting fact. Disneyland cast members never point with a single finger and use a two-finger point or an open-handed gesture. And that's because it's considered rude in some cultures, and they always want to be welcoming to everyone. And Disney was often photographed using the Disney point gesture.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a statue of Walt Disney doing the Disney point with Mickey, which I think is kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
I also just generally love
the cast members and like their different personalities. Like the Evil Queen, the TikToks of her are hilarious, where she's just like straight up roasting people.
I love it. I love all of them. I love the villains the most. Yeah. I love October because it's just so good.
Beautiful. So one of the myths is that people never die at Disneyland. And we'll chat more about that in a bit. And it's fueled by the rumor that deaths are not officially pronounced until off the property. There's also a known problem of people trying to spread their loved ones' ashes at the park or inside the rides. And this usually ends with the ride getting shut down for extreme cleaning, and the person who did it gets removed from the park, sometimes even banned. According to One Page Online, many employees have confirmed that they use code grandma unofficially when this happens. And allegedly, a former Disney World custodian said, "So ashes are spread, first the ride shuts down. It's a biohazard, so the ride must be evacuated. Then custodial comes down in hazmat suits with a little vacuum. We would vacuum up the ashes and disinfect the area. Then we take the ashes, dump them in the trash, and apologize to grandma for ending up in a trash can." And like, okay, one, I could absolutely see people doing this and trying to like sneak in about it. But I would also say that if you know that this is a problem, right, that people are going to do this and they're going to like, not only are they going to do this, but they're going to continue to do this. Maybe you just lean into it. Right. And you just, you have a place where people can do that, where it can be like forever Disney. And it's an area where like basically you've got fucking cremated sand art of people. You know what I mean?
Cremated sand art of people.
Feel free to listen at the end of the episode where there is explicit instructions on how I would like my remains to be disposed of upon my death.
Perfect. Perfect.
Anywho, let's move on from ashes to Walt Disney's private apartment, which was above the firehouse on Main Street. The lamp at the window is traditionally kept on to symbolize Walt Disney's presence. Some of the cast members say that they greet Walt's spirit when opening or closing the park. Some as a tradition and some as a superstition. Love the idea. Just good morning, good night. Cute.
Yeah. Now, another fun fact, and this is probably one of my favorite ones about Disneyland, is there's estimated to be about 200 cats that live on the property.
I love that for them.
Yeah. And sightings go back to the 50s. And one story that we were able to find is allegedly Walt was bringing the Imagineers into the castle because he wanted to create some sort of attraction in it. Instead of finding like empty space that they thought they could just build something, they found a bunch of cats living in the castle and they were full of fleas.
Oh, no. So
I read something that was like the people would be really upset if they eliminated the cats.
Yeah, I think they would.
So what they did is they adopted them out to a lot of the cast members. And then, of course, they dealt with the flea problem. Mm-hmm, so I love that they're like, hey, you came to work. Here's a kitten. Like, thanks for coming in today. That's how I imagine it went.
I love that. Who doesn't want like a kitten bonus?
So after they dealt with the flea problem, they started noticing with the cats being gone, a new problem presented itself, and it was a rodent problem. Luckily, there were some more feral cats just not living, you know, in the castle. And they were coming out at night and they were helping curb the problem a bit. And Disney and the crew soon realized that the cats were actually doing a better job than any extermination company could. And they were fearful, like the cats were fearful of people. So they were only coming out at night and they weren't really causing any issues to like any of the visiting guests. So what they decided to do is let them stay. And they were going to pay these cats for their time. So how they did that is they set up feeding stations all around the property. And they did capture all the cats so that they could be spayed and neutered. And some of the cast members who help care for like the horses on Main Street, they actually manage the cats and they seek medical treatment for them when it's needed. And like I had mentioned before, they mainly only come out at night. But over the years, some have become friendly towards people. And so when that happens, they're actually adopted out. And the same goes for any accidental litter of kittens that happens on the property. So those are adopted out as well.
We don't want friendly cats here. We only want employee cats.
Yeah, they have a job to do.
I love that they're like, we need exterminator cats because friendly cats are going to cause a problem that will be unsafe for the cats, right? Them wandering onto rides or trying to get food from people. And then they're like, this cat's had 2 pounds of ice cream today.
Exactly. I did look last time we were there.
You bet your bibby you looked. Of course you did. You tell me there's cats in some place, I'm eagle eyes. I'm looking for those cats.
Right. I just wasn't looking in the right spots, apparently. So if you do want to spot one of the cats, again, don't try to pet them. We don't want them to want to hang out with humans, but the best places to see them is the Hungry Bear Restaurant, Taste Pilot's Grill in California Adventure, Whitewater Snacks in the Grand Californian, the Rose Court Garden at the Disneyland Hotel, and then I guess there's a ditch that runs parallel to the path for Mickey and Friends, the tram. I'm assuming that there's some hidden feeding areas in these places, and that's why they hang out there.
That would make sense. And also, there might be a higher concentration of rodents and things for them to hunt. Do you know what I'm saying? There has to be some sort of, like, this is where they can sleep, and this is cozy stuff, because that's how they keep them from not wanting to go get a luxurious life. You know what I mean? They're not like, I'm not going to go beg a child for ice cream because they're feeding me tuna back here.
Exactly. So it seems like these cats are happy cats. There's actually a website dedicated to the cats, and it's DisneylandCats.com that I stumbled upon this week. And it features a bunch of facts and pictures of the cats. And there's, I'm hoping everyone's heard of it, but there's like an exclusive club at Disneyland called Club 33. And it's insanely hard to get into. Like, you have to know someone with a membership. It's super hard to get a membership. It's insanely expensive. But my favorite part when I was going through the website is they said that the cats sometimes walk into Club 33, whereas, like, people cannot get into this place. But the cats just like, I live here. And there's a picture on the site of the cat inside a piano inside this exclusive club, just chilling. You know how they'll sleep anywhere.
I love that. Also, I am very unlikely to go to a website to view random cat photos, but I am very likely to enjoy it on Instagram. And it is Disneyland Cats. Very simple to find. So far, my favorite's Francisco.
I don't know. This orange one at a piano. I used to have an orange cat and it reminds me of him so much. It's so cute.
That's fair. So you are listening to True Creeps, right? So we are going to talk about ghosts, of course.
Of course.
Talking about Walt's apartment above that fire station. Shortly after his death, a woman from the maintenance crew was in the apartment cleaning and noticed the lamp was lit. She turned it off and left after she was finished. And when she got outside, looked back up and the lamp was lit. So she went back up, turned it off again, came back outside, looked up, and it's fucking on again. So then she goes back up to turn it off, but then she didn't leave. She was like, wait a minute. And she watched the lamp turn itself back on right in front of her. And Walt Disney died in 1966. So it's not as though there was like a light timer or an Alexa or anything like that could have done that. There could have been some sort of electrical change that reset the circuit, but it would be a crazy coincidence for it to happen like so many times in this moment, right? Like she turned it off, went downstairs, turned it off, and then was like, wait a minute. And then it turned on again. That feels like too many occurrences for it to just be a weird electrical fluke.
Yeah.
Today, it is a completely different lamp. But as we mentioned earlier, they keep it on. Especially because he's just going to fucking turn it back on. He's like, I want this light on. And yes, sir. So, additionally, it has been shared that cast members have reported hearing footsteps and knocking coming from the apartment, especially at night. Daryl Wagner, a former cast member, shared two stories about working in the park. The first one was about the railroad that circles the park. He said that Walt loved Disneyland Railroad, aka the railroad that circles the park. And there's a command center at the park with a board that shows where the trains are on the track. Late at night, in the far corner, a train would show on the board and the whistle would blow when there was no train out there. Employees began to call this phenomenon Walt's train. Love that he was like, I've even got my own ghost train.
Right? I want a ghost train.
Yeah. Additionally, Walt smoked, but he never wanted the kids to see him do so. So he would go to the staircase behind the apartment to smoke. The security supervisor that worked in the park told Daryl about how he constantly smelled smoke as if someone was actively smoking. Then he would go to try to catch whoever was back there smoking, but no one was ever there and there were never any cigarette butts. So everyone decided it was Walt having a secret smoke break. You know how I feel about ghost scents. I don't like it, but, you know, okay, and that's an interesting one.
Yeah, and I know certain scents can stick around or other things can smell like that and make you...
But outside.
Outside's a little odd, but interesting. Now, Walt has been actually spotted by several people, too. One guest, who was let in after hours by a cast member friend... said, quote, we saw a man standing just outside the castle on the drawbridge. He smiled and waved. She mentioned recognizing him as Walt. He stayed for about 20 seconds and then slowly disappeared. It was the second time the cast member friend had seen Walt at the park.
Interesting.
Another person named Anna Bees said that she had also seen Walt several times, including in his window of the apartment and leaning against a lamppost by Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln. And he was smoking there. So I guess not always hiding it.
Yeah.
Now, there is security footage of a figure walking through the park that many believe is Walt Disney. The surveillance footage was taken at night when the park is completely empty and you can clearly see something walking. And the interesting part is once it's out of frame in one camera, it continues onto the next camera. And that's the part that I was like, that's different than like the usual orb or something that just appears and disappears on the one frame or the one camera. So it makes it harder to say that it was a weird light reflection or something like that. But it is an interesting watch. Now, people have also reported several stores and even some of the food kiosks around the park being haunted. One story we found was on the fourth floor stockroom of the Star Trader, which is like the exit to Star Tours. Apparently, they may have some random cold spots and some odd feelings sometimes. Additionally, at the gift shop, merchandise has been moved around and rearranged after closing. So someone's like, you did this wrong. Let me redo it.
Follow my directions here. Come on.
Exactly. By one of the ice cream carts, people have heard a woman's voice when no one is around them or no one that would match that voice is around them. Mm-hmm. Again, it's hard to think of being at Disneyland and it being empty, but occasionally there's little pockets that are.
Yeah.
People have also said that they've spotted a woman in white on Main Street. Because what haunted place would it be without a woman in white?
We've also talked about woman in white, woman in red. I'm trying to think of all of the women in colors. Like, we just love to see a woman in something.
Yeah. She is on Main Street sometimes. And according to the people that have seen her, she's wearing turn of the century clothes.
Okay. So she's wearing, she's got Juicy Couture track pants.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
She's got a dress on, but jeans underneath. She's got, a hard part that's super to one side.
Hey, leave that, leave the part out of this.
Let's see. Let's see what else. Sorry. It just, as in real time, I was looking at her outline at the turn of the century and I was like, 2000s, baby. It counts.
No, it doesn't. Anyways, this woman in white is dressed in early 1900s clothes. But... what I think is like odd is there's also actors or like cast members throughout Disneyland that are in different period clothing sometimes, depending on what's going on there too. So I'm like, is that one a ghost or is that just like someone working that isn't seen often?
But also like you can come in onto the park and wear something fucking bananas so long as you're not actively dressed as a character, right? So you could just be someone in 1900s turn of the century clothes. Like, existing.
Exactly.
It doesn't sound comfortable, but, like, theoretically one could.
Now, there is a legend around this saying that she died on the property in the early 1900s. And like we brought up, the land was orange groves and fields, farm fields before. But it definitely could have had some deaths, like, in the fields. Or if there's farmhouses. I couldn't find anything documented as to who this may be. Or if it was just someone working that day or visiting the park.
Yeah. So our next stories are from Ashley Marie Castro, a former cast member, and she said she had a lot of weird stuff happen to her while she was working. She didn't specify which store, but when she was alone working one morning before the park opened, she heard the stockroom door open and close, but no one was there. She then heard a crash and something in the stockroom had been broken. And she says that there was no way that it could have fallen off the shelf by itself. So, like, you would know, okay, is this something where if it was on the edge, it could crash off versus something that maybe it's a little bit heavier and it's off the front of it. There are also rumors from cast members of seeing someone late at night on the monorail tracks. They describe the person as a young man running along the tracks at the back of the park. And there is a reason that this could exist. However, we hope not. And we're going to talk about it in a moment, but there is a possibility that this could be the spirit of someone who actually did die there. Another cast member said, on Main Street one morning, just after opening, they were sweeping next to the Mickey statue when they heard an older gentleman say, "Excuse me, miss," from behind them.
Perfect.
The cast member then turned around, smiling, ready to help, but there was no one behind them. And there also wasn't anyone around them that would match the voice that they heard.
That's fair. I know sometimes like when you look at someone, you're like, I know what their voice is going to sound like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like it's a different like tone of voice entirely.
Yeah.
And especially like I would imagine there's a disproportionate number of children around. So like it's clear. Probably not like a 7-year-old. So let's talk a little bit about Space Mountain. There is a spirit that members call Disco Debbie. And Disco Debbie is said to be a glowing green ghost inside the Space Mountain ride who was rumored to be a former cast member who died of an aneurysm behind the building. And we couldn't find any information that would tell us who this could have been. So we don't know. Is this an urban legend? Additionally, single riders on Space Mountain have said that while they were on the ride, they got sat next to a guy with reddish hair who looked like his face was flushed, so it was like redder. And when the ride would end, they'd look over. Guy's gone. And the rumor is that the man who they had sat next to was someone who had died on the ride in the 1970s. And he's referred to as Mr. One Way. I mean, kind of a cool name, I guess. We saw one story on Reddit about a person riding with him when they were a kid. They said he was very nice, and they chatted with them for a few. And when the picture was taken during the ride, they screamed, "This is fun, right?" And when they looked over, he was gone.
Could you imagine?
I would hope that there was like two photos, like one when you're like, "This is fun," and then two when you're like, "Where's the guy?"
Also, there's a video of like the people entering this ride that some say is Mr. One Way getting on the ride with someone.
And I will say that when I was watching that video, Amanda had found it and sent it to me, and she was like, "Look at this." And my eyes were immediately drawn to where the anomaly in the video is, like before I even knew what was going on. And whatever it is appears to be human-ish shaped, and it moves with human mannerisms. You never quite know what it's like, something from nowadays, if it's real or an effect or AI, but it is interesting.
It is.
So Mr. One Way has also been seen in the cast member locker room near the building. However, when we were trying to figure out who could Mr. One Way be, we couldn't find any reports about anyone dying on Space Mountain at Disneyland. There was one, though, that showed that someone had gotten seriously injured in a ride in 1983, and another that showed that an employee got hurt after falling down outside the ride in 2012. I would just very thoroughly believe you might not advertise where a person died in the park if they died in the park. It is a place for children's joy. Exactly. And I wouldn't want to shatter that illusion. And I don't think it's a necessary thing to be out in the world, right? Especially if they died of something that wasn't ride related.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, we couldn't find anything, especially at Disneyland. There are lists between all of Disney parks, I'd assume, but I've seen the two, Disneyland and Disney World, where it does mention known deaths. And just like we've talked about hotels and things like that, though, there's no way. No one's going to know every single death inside a place.
No.
Now, the next attraction we're going to talk about is one that I never experienced. But back when the attraction America Sings was in Tomorrowland, cast members have said that they've heard a voice say, "Be careful," when no one is around. The building is now the Star Wars launch bay, and some have said that they felt strange while being in it and around the building. Some believe, though, that it's due to just the weird corridors and the lighting throughout the building, but it is kind of a strange area. And I saw, as I was researching, there's a ton of videos about how that space is not used properly and that it can be used as more things. And honestly, when I was looking, I was like, I don't even remember that being, like, I know the building, but I've never really gone inside of it. It's interesting because I've been all around the park, but I don't think I've actually ever been in that building. But cast members working on the Matterhorn have also felt a presence there. After the ride closes at night, two cast members are said to have to walk the track. And from what I understand, they're looking for anything abnormal or if anyone lost any items throughout the day, and they're picking them up. One cast member shared that they felt really uneasy when they had to do this, and they felt like someone was watching them. They were convinced that it was a female spirit of someone who we will talk about in a little bit, and they said that they always would greet the spirit, like to acknowledge them. The worst feeling was, I guess, when they'd go through this big cavern in the middle of the ride. Often the lights didn't work in this area, and they said that it always seemed like they were burnt out. And in the 6 years that they worked there, they never saw the lights in this area that they call Dolly's Dip work. I thought that was interesting. I feel like walking a ride at night, especially, you know, a lot of them are very immersive and dark and not scary, but like it's a whole different thing, I'd say, at night when everything's off and nothing's moving. Like it's going to give a real creepy feeling.
Yeah, I feel like anything when you're seeing it, something that's like bright and cheery, and then you see it at night, it's like, oof.
Yeah. Now, another one is It's a Small World. And I will say I hate this ride so much. It's creepy in general. I never go on it. I actively avoid going near it. Cast members believe this to be haunted as well. But from the rumors that I saw, they think it's either former cast members or visitors coming back because they loved the ride so much. And some believe that the dolls come to life and move even when they're turned off.
Yeah, see, I don't like that.
No. I think that they're creepy when they're on. I can't imagine when they're off. But yeah, that ride to me is just horrifying. Now, let's talk about one of my favorite rides now. The Haunted Mansion. And there are several rumors around the Haunted Mansion being haunted by various ghosts and a bunch of different reasons. And we're going to just focus on a couple today. But remember how we said that people like to spread ashes inside Disneyland?
Wow.
Well, a few of these stories link back to that. On December 16th of 2004, Andy Sharp had just started working for Disneyland, and they were assigned to work at the Haunted Mansion attraction. And in their story, they noted that for their hired class, is the best way I could describe it, they were the only one chosen to work at this attraction. All the others were given a different attraction, so they were separated. After training, their first shift was a closing shift. So they're working at their attraction, closing for the first time. They were tasked by their leaders to grab a flashlight and a trash picker and walk the ride. So it seems like that's a common theme around the rides. Once it's shut off, someone has to walk the ride.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So they were also told, hey, while you're in there, there might be a light that's burnt out in the ballroom section of the ride. Can you just take a look and tell us if it is? So, of course, they grab everything. They're on their way. They mentioned how weird it was that the mannequins in the ballroom were not moving and they were shining their light around the room. That's one of like the best scenes, I think, in the ride. As they're shining their flashlight around, they see a figure in a red hoodie facing the corner. They're panning their flashlight around. And so they like quickly see it and then they go back to it. When they go back to it, the figure was gone. So they quickly just finish their tasks and they come back to what they called base. Their leaders were like, okay, do you have anything to report? Asking about the light, anything they encountered, right? And they answered, didn't find the broken bulb, but I think maintenance was in there. And their leads were kind of puzzled and they're like, what maintenance?
Uh-oh.
Andy replied, the guy in the red hoodie. I think he was fixing the light you were talking about. The leads then said, oh, that's just Timmy.
Oh, that's just Timmy.
And Andy, they wrote, what the hell is a Timmy?
What the hell is a Timmy?
And the leads replied, it's our resident ghost. The story goes that his mom spread his ashes in the ride because he wanted to be part of the attraction forever. And there was another article we were able to find that also mentioned that a woman did spread her son's ashes, or allegedly did, in this ride, and that it was their child's dying wish. She was told that she wasn't allowed to do it, but the rumor is that she snuck back in and did it anyways. And people have also reported a small boy crying near the exit, which I think is so horrible if that's true.
Yeah.
There's also other reports of elevator number 2 being haunted and guests seeing the ghost of a small boy as they enter their doom buggies. So there's a lot of different sightings of a young boy. I don't know if it's the same boy, but I guess his name is Timmy, or at least that's what they call him.
That's very sad. So Andy shared another story while working at the mansion, and this happened on February 8th of 2005. He said that they were walking the conveyor belt that is used to load the guests into the buggies. And as a buggy came around, they noticed a candy wrapper came out of it. And he said, it danced around a bit on the conveyor belt, like invisible strings were pulling it. So Andy and their coworker watched this happen and then paused as they watched the wrapper come towards them. Later, they were chatting with other cast members about this kind of floating candy wrapper. And that's when the other cast members told Andy that buggy number 92 is haunted. And they said that that was also the buggy where Timmy's ashes had been put.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When they were telling the story too, they're like, kids like candy, so it makes sense.
If you've never had an inanimate object that should not be floating towards you float towards you, it is quite unnerving. So I would imagine that even a candy wrapper, you're like, hi, Timmy, please stop.
Right. And it coming from the buggy, because they're always moving. So like, I can see them kind of, you know, like it falling out, but it still coming towards them is interesting.
Yeah. So on May 8th of 2005, Andy was closing again. And they were about to load the last family into the buggy when they noticed glowing red eyes in one of the windows. And in the picture of this, the particular window, it's the last one on the row of windows and it's closest to the busts in the loading area. They said that the eyes were peeking through the blinds and that originally they thought it was a laser or a weird light, so they ignored it. And then after loading that last family on the buggy, they still saw it. And they said it wasn't the shape of humans, nor was it at a human height. And when they went to investigate, as they got closer, it disappeared. So Andy then saw it shortly after and described that it was kind of glaring.
Weird.
Unnerving. As Andy was describing this, they described feeling fearful for no reason.
I hate it.
Yeah. Also, like, sometimes you just gotta trust your gut, you know?
Yeah.
And Andy closed the story with, quote, "Oddly enough, if you go to the mansion now, all the window blinds are open in the hallway except one."
I have to look now. I have to know.
Yeah. Another cast member shared that they were in the backstage hallways beneath the mansion, where there was a cast member cafeteria in that area. So there are often lots of people around. They couldn't remember exactly where the exit to get to the cafeteria was. So they're just kind of wandering the halls. As they passed a custodial closet, they saw a woman that they kind of knew, and they had spoken to each other once or twice before. As they passed the closet, this cast member smiled at the woman and then continued walking. A week or so later, another cast member told them that same woman had died. And they were fairly certain they saw her in that closet after she died. So, Amanda, what did we talk about in our Mimics episode?
Mm-hmm. It gave me the chills.
That definitely could be a fetch depending on like the timing of it.
Yeah.
That gives me chills as well. Creepy.
Yeah. But could you imagine? You're like, what day was that?
Like, give me the days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially something like just like giving someone like a pleasant smile as you walk by and you're like, yes. I'm not tracking dates for that.
Right. And then when you think of like fetches too, like they didn't interact, they didn't talk.
Exactly.
Ugh, that one gave me chills. There's a few of these that I was reading very late at night too, where I was like, oh, this one's weird. Another ride that is rumored to be haunted is the Pirates of the Caribbean. And in the control tower on surveillance cameras, supposedly a boy has been spotted on one of the monitors in one of the boats. And he always seems super stoked to be there. But when the boat comes back to the station, it's empty and there's no boy inside.
Oh.
So this is the one that I think gave me the biggest chills. And one cast member shared a story about their closing shift in Critter Country. It was around 1:45 in the morning, and they were walking in front of Splash Mountain on their way out. They were new, and they even remarked in their story how no one wanted to wait for the new guy. So they were just kind of looking at their phone and walking out. It's a long walk. It's a big park. As they did, though, right in front of the Splash Mountain entrance, they saw a little girl in what they described as a dress that kind of looked like a First Communion white dress. They estimated her to be about 7 or 8. And they panicked a little because they were still new. And they're like, okay, I don't know the ins and outs of the lost child protocols. And they also remember being a little annoyed because they're like, how did security leave a child alone? Like, I would think that they would have already checked this area. So they start walking towards her and they ask if she's lost or needs help. Like, they call out to her because her back was to them. As the cast member got closer, about 20 yards away, the girl started running towards them. So she flips around, starts running towards them.
Absolutely not. Hard no.
They remember weirdly not hearing any footsteps as she ran.
We don't like that, do we?
So as the little girl came closer, the cast member thought, oh my gosh, she's gonna like run into me. But it never happened. When they looked again, the girl was gone. They looked around for a little bit before they just left and they were like, it isn't my problem anymore. Security can do their job. So they did look a little bit, but they also didn't want to make a big deal of it because they were afraid that they'd get in trouble for leaving because they didn't continually look for this little girl.
That makes sense, though.
Yeah. About a week later, they're chatting with a lead who had worked there for about 20 years. So they asked, have you ever seen anything weird at night? Mm-hmm. And the lead responded, did you see the girl in the white dress? They remember the feeling of their stomach dropping at that moment. And apparently, cast members for Splash Mountain, the Haunted Mansion, and Tom Sawyer's Island have had all similar stories of this little girl. They named the little girl Mary. I guess the story goes that this little girl loved the island and the Haunted Mansion and that area of the park in the 70s. And sadly, she had leukemia. And when she passed away, her parents spread her ashes on the island. Years after doing so, the parents told some of the cast members about doing it. But by that time, they had already seen her on the island and walking around the area that would eventually become Critter Country.
That's very interesting. I can understand wanting to, like, have your kid where you wanted them, but also stop making other people's children be near human remains.
Yeah. The little girl seems like she's having a great time.
You know what? For sure. So let's talk about why Disneyland might be haunted. So not only have there been tragic events and deaths, etc., but we've also talked before about a ghost can kind of hitchhike and decide to stay someplace else. So with that many visitors, what are the odds that somebody didn't have somebody attached to them going for a ride or they didn't have like a haunted belt buckle, as one does?
Well, that, and they're like, hey, this place looks fun. And there's a lot of other spirits here. Yeah. We can go on rides together.
Also, like, prime people watching, sign me up.
Yeah.
So we'll discuss some of the deaths, but there have also been some terrible injuries over the years. The first rumored death happened in 1964 on the Matterhorn Bobsled Ride, which opened in 1959. Mark Maples, a 15-year-old from Long Beach, passed away after several days in the hospital after he had fallen from the ride. It's speculated that he unbuckled his seatbelt, or another rider may have unbuckled his seatbelt, and that he fell after that, and then he hit his head. He fractured his skull and ribs and had internal injuries as well. The other riders in his sled didn't know what happened initially, and it sounded like one of them may have felt Mark bump into them, but didn't realize that he had, like, fallen fully, right? They were just like, oh, like, you're nudging me. And, like, sometimes mm-hmm. with rides moving and stuff, I could see how you wouldn't necessarily know, and you're not paying attention to the other riders. You're paying attention to the ride itself.
And I will say, this ride is aggressive, especially, like, we went on it last year or the year before, whenever we were there last. And as an adult, it's mm-hmm. aggressive compared to what I remember as a child.
Yeah, fair. So from the newspaper articles that we've seen, we believe that he was sitting in the middle seat of the sled. So it's not as though he was, like, on an edge so people would see him when they were looking around. It's like they were looking literally everywhere but where he was, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Then in 1966, Thomas Guy Cleveland, who was 19 years old, tried to sneak into Disneyland by climbing the fence and going onto the monorail platform. A security guard, Theodore Thomas, spotted Thomas Guy Cleveland and yelled for him to jump down because the monorail was coming. Instead, Thomas jumped below onto the canopy, which was about 3 feet under the rail. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough to clear the oncoming monorail, and he was then dragged about 30 to 40 feet. He died instantly. His parents were notified about his death while they were on a vacation in Colorado. It's believed that there were others who were also trying to climb to sneak in too, but after they saw what happened, they ran away. And that particular night was an all-night grad party at the park, so folks think that they may have been trying to sneak in to attend.
Break your heart. So sad.
It does, right? Like 19 and 15, just kids.
Right. Now, there's a lot of tragedies. So these ones, they all break my heart. But in 1967, Rick Yanma, who was 15, was on the People Mover ride. And Rick was crushed when he fell beneath the wheels of the side when he was trying to move between two of the cars. So the cars were traveling in a tunnel. And what he tried to do is jump from one car to the next. I was not familiar with this ride, but it was an elevated scenic tour of Tomorrowland. And it was said to be slow moving. It was about 16 minutes long, and people continually make videos about wanting it to come back. And today, you could still see some of the tracks around Tomorrowland. And I've never actually noticed them because I didn't know that this existed. But now when I look back at some of my pictures, I'm like, oh, that's like what I'm looking at. That's what it is. I've seen a sign for it before, but I don't know if it was when he was there, but apparently there was like a faster section of it as well. It seems scary because it almost invites, with it being slow moving, like you don't know how dangerous it is.
Yeah, like you underestimate what could happen.
Exactly. So we've mentioned the island before. And on June 22nd, 1973, Bogdan De La Rowe, who was 18, and his younger brother, who was 10 at the time, stayed on Tom Sawyer Island past its closing time. And from what I saw, I believe that they had climbed a fence that separated the island from the little settler's cabin there. And they stayed there undetected until it was fully closed. Now, when they were ready to leave, they didn't want to call for help because they were worried that they were going to get in trouble for breaking the rules. So they thought it would be best to swim back to shore. The younger brother wasn't a great swimmer or may not even have known how to swim. So Bogdan tried to carry him on his back as he swam to the shore. Unfortunately, he only made it about halfway before he went under. The younger brother dog paddled and was able to stay afloat. And luckily someone spotted him in the water and was able to bring him onto a boat. They looked for Bogdan for a while and they couldn't find him. And his body was found the next morning, about 8 hours later. And his body was located in the Rivers of America Rapids. And that is an area that encircles the island, from what I understand. I'm trying to remember how like the water looks, and they have little shows and stuff in that area. And so it's not meant to be like swam in. There's some boats and there's some things that happen there. So I wonder if maybe he either just got tired or hit something, but it's so sad.
Also, I think the hardest part about these is just like the accidental deaths in a place where that's supposed to bring joy. That's what like really just is like, ugh.
Now, there are, like I said, there's so many tragedies that have taken place. But before we started recording, we were like, there are so many people that have come here too. So it's not strange that things have happened here. But because we do find so much joy in this place, it's like just a different feeling when you realize what has happened, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like you don't often think about all the things that can go wrong. We also just objectively know that theme parks can be really dangerous.
Yeah.
Especially if you're thinking like the further back in time you go, we just learn more and more about how to keep people safe. And that's just difficult, right?
It's evolving, right? And technology evolves and...
Yeah, and the understanding of everything that could go wrong and the way that, like, I would imagine that today when they design a ride, they probably have simulations on everything that could happen based on, like...
Kind of like a car.
The way that it is. Yeah, yeah. And I would imagine that they would do things like that. Hey, like, how can we account for, like, user error and stuff like that? And, like, how can we account for kids being children and being excited and making a mistake? And, like, those shouldn't be fatal. Mm-hmm. Or how can we make it so that if someone makes a decision that is dangerous, it's not life-threatening. I think that there is a lot more effort nowadays to be able to preserve like children's safety while doing these things.
Yeah.
I like the idea that we're doing that now and that we can do that with technology.
Yeah. And I think you made a good point is like things are changing. And especially like for a ride, there's so many different things happening that work together to create this environment and this ride and this magical thing happening.
Yeah, this magical experience.
That many things like moving and turning and like you said, kids being kids, they're going to do silly things sometimes. And yeah, it's hard to account for every single what if, especially back then. We have different technology that does help with some of that, which is nice. But yeah, back then we didn't. This next tragic event I hadn't heard of before, and I've seen attractions similar to this, and now it really makes me think about like how they operate. But on July 8th of 1974, Deborah Stone, who was 18, was working at Disneyland, and her job was to be the hostess for the attraction America Sings. And while working, she was caught between a moving wall and a stationary one as the outer ring of six theaters rotated past the fixed stage. So let me explain how that worked. It's a round attraction. It used to be what I believe is a carousel. So, you know, spins, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
Well, what they did is the outer ring, think I'm going to like put it in rings, but the outer ring-ish area was where the audience would sit, right? And in the middle, there were six stages that turned. So the audience could be watching a different stage, right? It would just like turn.
Okay. Yeah. I can pick up what you're putting down.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like animatronics with like, I don't know, singing, whatever. And they would do something and then the stage would turn to the next one. They'd watch that little thing, then it would turn. But there were six of them. From what I understand, I tried to watch a few videos on this. The middle part didn't turn. It was like a storage closet or something like that. But the stages itself would turn. There was a little crevice like between them that a person could fit into. And so once the stage would play, it would rotate to the next one. I want to say it was like every 2 to 4 minutes. And Debbie's job was to introduce the first stage. And then at the end, she would say goodbye to the audience. After saying goodbye to a group, she walked to go to the next stage and somehow either fell, lost her balance, I'm not sure. But she ended up between these two back wall areas between the stages. And again, they moved every 2 to 4 minutes. And so at this time, it was starting to get ready to reset to the next cycle. And so she screamed for help, but no coworkers heard her. I assume that this was like a loud attraction, right? Singing.
Yeah.
Some audience members may have heard her. Like they're like, oh, maybe we did hear a scream, but they weren't sure if it was somehow part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I did see one other source, too, that says a man named Daniel Robison. And he was a member of the Air Force. He was sitting with his family in the front row of one of the theaters, the adjoining theater. And he told investigators that he looked to his right and he saw what he thought was a child being pulled between the platform and the wall. And he did hear a scream. And the reason why he may have thought it was a child is Deborah was only 5'2". So she wasn't very tall.
Yeah.
But when the platform stopped, he went and notified operators. But unfortunately, she was already gone. When the stages began to move, it essentially contorted her body and broke her bones. And it's believed, this hurt my soul, it's believed that she didn't die until it turned several times. Ugh. I feel like that is one of the most hellish deaths that you can think of. Like, I think of like a horrible movie.
Yeah, just devastating.
Yeah. And her family sued and won a settlement, and there were additional safeguards put in place into the attraction, which reopened only 3 days after the incident. From what I understand, it was like alarm systems or something, like if someone went into that area. And I think there's a few other things, but it wasn't like deeply outlined. The attraction was closed in 1988, and a lot of the animatronics were repurposed and placed in other areas of the park. And the same building now houses Star Tours, the launch bay. So remember I said that building that I'm like, I see it. I don't think I've ever actually like been drawn to go to it.
Yeah.
But it's like this big round building. And some of the rumors or like the lore that I saw is because the animatronics were placed in different rides that perhaps she visits those rides. And a lot of people think that she is there to protect others. So like they've heard, be careful, or if they leave something out, it's moved so that no one can trip over it. Little things like that.
Yeah.
That one hurt my heart.
That hurts my heart. I also like, I would imagine that as much as I always talk about, I don't want someone to be working their ghost job, right? But I would imagine that a lot of the people who work at Disney are fucking hyped to be working at Disney, right? So it's not so much someone staying at their ghost job as like being in a place that they genuinely loved. And that actually makes me happy. And that like in my heart of hearts, I'm hoping that she's like, this is a place I loved and I don't want anyone else to hurt. So I'll be here.
Yeah. Or I mean, I wonder too, you know how we've talked about how like a spirit may not just be the one spirit.
Yeah.
That perhaps like there's different, I don't know, different spirits within the one spirit that can be doing multiple things. And I wonder if she was like, okay, I need to make sure no one gets hurt in this area again. And like left kind of a part of herself there.
I think that would be a worthy essence split, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Gerardo Gonzalez, who was 18, was a recent San Diego High School graduate and was at the grad night celebration in June of 1980. In the early morning hours, he was riding the People Mover and was climbing car to car. When it entered the super speed tunnel adjacent to the America Sings building, he stumbled and fell onto the track. When the next set of cars approached, unfortunately, they crushed him beneath the wheels, and his body was dragged a few hundred feet before the ride was able to be stopped.
Horrific.
Ugh, that's just another example of like them learning how to account for people being excited and stuff like that. Then Phil Strom was also celebrating his graduation, and he was there with his high school class, which was Albuquerque High, and he visited Disneyland on June 4th of 1983. Phil and a friend climbed into a restricted area in Frontierland and took a motorized maintenance raft to Tom Sawyer Island. On the way back to shore, the boat hit a rock and tossed them both overboard. The friend was able to swim and notified security that his friend had never made it back. Unfortunately, Phil's body was found and he was pronounced dead on the scene. Just so heartbreaking.
Yeah, and something I saw was like with man-made water features like that, it is definitely not made for someone to swim in. So obviously they didn't mean to swim in there, but it's not built in a way like we've talked about Lake Lanier and like how dangerous it is and their stuff. I think under some of the water, there are different features for some of their shows too. So I almost wonder if maybe he got caught on something or if there are rocks there or whatever, or perhaps hit his head. I don't know, but it's so sad because he was just 18.
Yeah. They're all like, I feel like everyone who we've talked about was very young. On March 7th of 1981, Mel Yorba, who was 18, was fatally stabbed with a knife in the heart during a fight with a 28-year-old man named James O'Driscoll, and they were both inside Tomorrowland. Security apprehended O'Driscoll and the woman he was with, Julie Holdener. This happened during a private event, and the park was closed to the public. According to reports, O'Driscoll and Mel were arguing over Julie. And some reports say that Mel may have grabbed or pinched Julie. Mel and O'Driscoll exchanged several punches before the knife was pulled out. Mel reportedly laid on the ground bleeding for about 20 minutes before he was taken to the hospital. His family filed a wrongful death suit against Disneyland, saying that the park did not provide adequate emergency care. We couldn't find any definitive sources on the outcome of that case, which isn't necessarily surprising because Disneyland is a part of Disney, which is a major corporation. And there's typically some sort of mechanism within the actual settlement, if there is a settlement, where it's not released. So not too surprising.
So there was another tragedy that happened on the Matterhorn bobsleds. And that was on January 3rd of 1984. And it involved Dolly Young, who was 48. And she died eerily similar to how Mark Maples did, who we spoke about earlier. So she was riding the Matterhorn bobsled, and she was about 2/3 of the way down the mountain. And unfortunately, she was thrown from her seat into the path of another bobsled going by. And her head and her chest were pinned beneath the wheels. When they looked at her sled, her seatbelt had not been fastened at the time of the accident. And she had been riding in the rear seat. And it is like a one person. I want to say it's three people in a row, a small row. But she was riding alone in the rear seat. And it's undetermined if she deliberately unfastened her belt. Some say that she may have unbuckled because the child in the front seat needed help or needed something. But it seems like in a lot of the reports that the middle seat was empty. So like it would have been kind of a far reach for someone to like reach up front. And
yeah,
if there was a child that needed help, though, I try to like put myself in that situation. I probably would try to lean over, get to them. And if you had to unbuckle your seatbelt, maybe. I don't know what happened. No one does. But it's horrific that she lost her life in that fashion. Now, cast members allegedly refer to this area where she died as Dolly's Dip. And they try to acknowledge her and let her know that they can feel when she's around. So they try to be respectful.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. Now, this next tragedy that took place is not anything that I would have ever thought could happen. But the next accident we'll talk about took place on the ship, the Columbia, as it docked on the rivers of America. So it was like the dock area and the ship that this happened. So on Christmas Eve of 1998, a cast member and two guests, Lon Phi Dawson and his wife, Lu Thoi Vong, were injured. And the couple, along with their son and grandson, were waiting to board the Columbia, so the ship. They had been visiting from Duval, Washington for a 10-day trip. As the ship approached the dock, I imagine that everyone was really excited, right? Like the ship's coming in, it's almost your turn to like board.
Yeah.
What happened is as it was coming in, an employee flung a mooring line around a cleat on the moving vessel. And under the strain, the bolt securing the cast iron cleat sheared off. And what it did is it hurled the hunk of metal into the crowd.
Ugh.
Now, the cleat ended up hurting several people. So the cast member, Christine Carpenter, her ankle and her foot were just completely broken. And it ended up striking the couple in the head. Lon was declared brain dead 2 days later and died when his life support system was disconnected. He had several skull fractures and hemorrhaging in the brain. So like, this was a metal object, just a freak accident, you know, like coming down when it should not have.
Yeah.
And what I saw is his wife, Lou, was reported to still be working with doctors nearly a year later because they were working to restore feeling to the side of her face that was struck. Christine, so the cast member, had reconstructive surgeries. I want to say surgeries, plural, for her severely injured foot. And in 2000, the family's claim against the park was settled. It was determined that the worker in charge of docking the ship had been poorly trained. And she had only received brief training, like an overview, on the Mark Twain, which is the steamboat at Disneyland. But the Columbia was not in use on the day of her training. So she never received hands-on training on that tall of a ship. Additionally, the bolts that were holding the cleat that had come undone, they were bent before the accident. So it showed that the ship had been docked improperly on at least several occasions. Additionally, the park had been criticized for cleaning up the accident scene pretty quickly, and police were delayed about 4.5 hours to reaching the scene, which seems like an insane long time for especially that horrific of a scene. And no one meant to hurt anyone in this situation, but it's horrific and it shouldn't have happened. The accident changed both Disneyland safety and theme park regulations for safety. And the police ended up setting up a permanent station at the park. Disneyland also adopted bell signals and changed the docking procedures. And it also brought back something that I hadn't really heard of, but it makes sense. But I guess they were phasing out a position, or at least there wasn't very many of them left. And it was a lead ride operator. And so they started bringing back that position. And so I think that's a good idea to have like a senior person at each ride, knowing the ins and outs. I saw there's a lot of information pertaining to this particular case because this one's a little more modern, too. There were a lot of newspaper articles and a lot of people saying this is the reason. So There's a lot more to it, but it's sad. It's a tragedy. So this next one, I think, hurt my heart a lot because the first time I brought my son to Disneyland was at the same age.
Yeah. So on September 22nd of 2000, Brandon Zucker, who was just 4 years old, visited Disneyland with his family. While riding in the spinning Roger Rabbit taxi ride, Brandon tumbled out of his car and he got trapped under another car. The car ended up rolling over onto him and basically Brandon was folded in half. He was stuck for about 10 minutes before he was freed, and some sources say that there went on and he was dragged for around 5 minutes. Brandon suffered brain damage from the incident. He suffered from a torn liver, spleen, and diaphragm, a collapsed left lung, and a fractured pelvis. He was also put into a medically induced coma, which I feel like is such a kindness because that is a lot of injury for a four-year-old.
Yes.
For anyone, it's terrible, but for a four-year-old who is like old enough to talk about it being in pain, but not really quite at a point where you can be like, this is what's going on, you know?
Yeah, just a baby.
Yeah. Brandon never talked or walked again. After the investigation, it was found that an employee did not load the car correctly, as the smallest rider should have been the furthest away from the cutout entryway. And additionally, the lap bar was not fully lowered. There were significant safety changes made, such as a sensor-equipped guard on the bottom of each of the cars. Brandon's family sued Disneyland, and at the age of 13, Brandon was found unresponsive and later died in the hospital.
I remember going on this ride when I was little, and there is a part where it does spin in this like big room, if I remember correctly. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I could totally see that happening. And I've honestly, even the last time I was there, I didn't know about this horrific event. But some of the cars where I'm like, what would happen? Would it stop if someone came out of this? Or
yeah,
what would happen? And now I hope that there are the sensors on everything. But it's just horrible to think about.
What's so difficult about all these is you assume that the park has accounted for like safety measures and that it's a safe ride. And that's why you're on it. And just like the things that we can do nowadays with simulations and stuff, we can make things so much safer. Yeah. But I think we assumed that things were safe because we were on them. And I'm glad they made the changes, but it hurts that those changes were possibly made because of what happened to Brandon. On September 5th of 2003, Marcelo Fernando Torres, who went by Mars, we believe, was 22 when he was killed during the derailment of the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. Around 11:20 a.m., the locomotive derailed and separated from the passenger cars. Mars was in the front car when it happened and suffered blunt force trauma to his chest, which fractured his ribs and lacerated his lungs. Mars bled to death at the scene. 10 others were injured, including his best friend, who did survive. Investigators found that improper maintenance was a key factor.
I actually remember the newspaper articles from this one.
Mm-hmm. It's so sad.
Which is horrific. Like, you don't think of, especially like a big theme park. I don't know if you have mm-hmm. the same thought process, but like when there's a fair in town, carnival mm-hmm. in town, I'm always like,
yes.
Because I'm like, they take those rides apart all the time. They move them around. Like, I don't trust those as much. But like anything can have a maintenance issue. Anything can have a
yes
situation. And it's just horrible to think about.
Like literally anything, right? Like bridges.
Yes.
So the last death that we're going to talk about today is Joanna Aguilar, who was 66 when she visited Disneyland with her adult daughters. Employees at the Jungle Cruise ride told the family a wheelchair accessible boat was unavailable. But Joanna opted to board one of the boats with the help of her daughters. When the ride was over, the employees, quote, placed small unsecured blocks on top of the existing steps inside the boat to reduce the height of each step. Joanne's daughters attempted to help her off the boat and claimed that the employees giggled as they watched their mother struggle. Joanne ended up losing her balance, fell backwards, and fractured her femur in her right leg. She then spent 10 days in the hospital after receiving surgery and then was moved to a rehab facility. Joanne spent 5 months in that rehab facility, and then she got an infection and went into septic shock. She died on January 29th of 2022, and her family filed a wrongful death and ADA lawsuit against Disney, but we haven't seen an outcome on this release quite yet. One of the things that I find really interesting about amusement parks, rides, attractions, and things like that is that we have this presumption of safety when you go into them. Some of the tickets that we buy for various types of things everywhere we go have waivers in them. Sometimes it's so that you can't sue them for things that happen. Sometimes it's reasonable stuff, right? If you are in a haunted house and you trip and fall, you cannot sue for that, right? Like that makes sense because it's like a place where you could trip and fall. So some waivers, I can understand. Sometimes they'll have arbitration agreements. So the idea is that you can't sue, but you can file arbitration. I think that one of the things is that we assume that these things are safe, right? Just like we talked about this in our haunted attractions episode, that we assume that these places that are open are safe because it's like a business. And I think that sometimes there's just a little bit too much trust there. And it's been years since I've gone to an amusement park, but I can't help but find myself thinking, like, the next time I go to an amusement park, maybe I'll take a look at the rides and how they're situated, especially if I'm with a kid or something like that, because it's never occurred to me that one mistake could have such awful consequences.
Yeah.
I'm not putting fault on anyone, but sometimes you have like young adults running these rides, or say someone's having a bad day and they just like kind of space out for a second. Just like with a lot of different jobs, there can be such an awful impact. So it makes me consider, okay, what's my responsibility as like a person going to these parks? If you would have asked me this 5 years ago, I would have been like, you go to a park, it's safe because they wouldn't want to get sued, right? But today, Lindsay is like, part of my theme park prep is taking a look at the rides and figuring out, like, if I've got a little one, where are they going to sit?
Yeah.
Based on that ride, because there's not that many rides.
And what I took away from this is, like, even the silliest rule that they give you when you're boarding a ride, there's a reason for it, right?
Like, yes.
Your brain wants to go, okay, they just want me to sit in this position. Or like, I know going with my kid, right? Especially when he was small and he's like, no, I want to sit there.
Yeah.
And they're like, the adult has to sit on this side. And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Like, you need to sit there. But now knowing, oh, it's because he could slip out, which obviously that one's an obvious one. But like, there are little things that they'll tell you or they'll check for.
I don't think that would occur to me either, right? Like, I don't think that's intuitive, like, at all. Like, I think none of it is intuitive, but... Yeah, I mean, I think it's scary.
Follow the rules.
Yeah, follow the rules.
Not giving anyone blame in any of these, because these are all just like horrific, crazy events that happened. But yeah, each rule, there's a reason for those rules, even if they seem minuscule.
Yeah, all of these tragedies are awful and were unexpected. And I think they weren't something that the person who had died or their family members in the given situations could have anticipated the consequence of what had happened. Mm-hmm. And so... I think that's just kind of one of these really just the tragedies. There's times when you're like, okay, the company is at fault. And I'm not saying whether they are or are not. It's just more that I don't think anyone anticipated that result, right? Like the person who helped the person onto the ride, the person who maybe didn't lock a door somewhere, or maybe somebody was supposed to be guarding an area so people couldn't sneak in. Nobody thought that the consequence could be that dire.
Yeah. And there's like a million what ifs for any attraction or yeah. Honestly, when there's that many humans around.
Yeah.
There's no way of predicting every single what if, because humans are going to be weird and do weird things. And it's not. Yeah. It just could be a domino effect, too, that like you don't know that you started.
Yeah.
And with all of these are just some basic details. There were a few injury firm sites that had some of these, but we tried to put them all together to have a full story.
Yeah.
This is not a full list by any means. And there's a good amount of tragedies that have happened all over the place. Just honestly, any hotel or any place that attracts a ton of people. But according to an injury attorney's website, there have been at least 32 deaths at the Disneyland Resort's California property. And this includes things like parking lots and hotels and things like that. So like anything that counts as Disney.
Yeah. So even like car accidents and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I was talking to Lindsay before we started recording and I was like, there are so many people that have come here. And at first when I was researching, I was like, that's a lot. That's a lot of things that happen. But when you think of how many people have stepped foot on this property, It's just wild to think like that many people. When you were talking about a billion, like how big that number is.
That's so many people.
So many people. And this just scratches the surface of all of the Disneyland lore of like hauntings and stories, and people have heard from this person that used to work there that knew this person, you know, how legends are started. But there's so many. And I was researching some of the stories. And when Lindsay and I looked at the outline, we're like, we're already at 18 pages. Like, we need to rein it in and stop at some point.
So hard sometimes, too.
Like, I know. I have a few that I read and I was like, this is good. So eventually we may do some other haunted Disney lore. If you have another place in mind, too, that you've heard interesting stories or ghost stories about that is like a public space that a lot of people visit, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah.
And if you have worked for Disneyland and want to share a story that may have happened or that you may have heard somewhere, we would love to hear that as well.
always. It's never too early for us to start talking about and asking for listener stories.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to know, too, is if you have visited the park, is there any spot that you've felt uneasy or like you felt strange feelings walking around this certain area? Because one thing that I have always thought, and every time I forget about it, and then when I go back, I'm like, oh, yeah, this. I've always hated the area around the Matterhorn at night in particular, and the area where you enter Tomorrowland. So it's like this big, I don't know, walkway. I don't know why. I just have never liked walking it. If I could avoid it and go the other route, which is a lot longer, I will.
Oh, that's interesting. I love a good, like, my gut says no.
Yeah.
And do you honor your gut?
Yeah, like, there's been a few times where I've walked through it and I always forget because we don't go every year. It's like every 2 or 3 years. And I'll be like, oh yeah, I didn't like this area. But to be fair, it is darker in that area and there isn't like an attraction between going between the Matterhorn and Tomorrowland. But it is just like a walkway area that isn't, there's not a lot going on. So maybe that could be it too. It has weird vibes because it's empty compared to other places that have a lot going on.
I could see that. That makes sense.
It could be that, but I have never loved it over there.
I have strong Disneyland opinions as well.
My kid brings up wanting to go to Disneyland at least like every other day.
He's nothing if not consistent.
He is. But yeah, I want to know all the strange stories that you have about Disneyland because I'm invested. And last night, I think I stayed up till 3 a.m. reading about more stories that I didn't even get to include because I was just like invested.
The best part of True Creeps is just like the pure joy of being able to just follow a rabbit hole and a curiosity. That's one of our favorite things. And when you're like thinking like, why do they have this particular episode? Chances are we were like, I have got a new rabbit hole.
Yes.
I'm ready. And like sometimes it'll start as like a suggestion from someone and then we'll move from there. But there's always a rabbit hole.
And this one, yeah, there's so many more. And I can't wait to read more about them. And if any of you have those stories, I am so excited to hear them. But with that, have a great weekend.
Thanks for creeping with us. Thanks for listening. And as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes, you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh. Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you. I love that you said when it's hot out, like, Amanda's like, it's not my fault I wasn't born in the 2 months where it's a hospitable temperature in Arizona.
You know what? That's not the same for my kid, at least, okay?
Yeah, you're right. He picked January.
He did.
Okay.
I love that that's where we went already.
You're welcome.
2 minutes, 18 seconds in. So quick. So quick.
I feel like we could do another one, because for Disney adults, if you will.
Disney Strikes Back.
I love a bad horror movie. And also sci-fi movies when they were just like chef's kiss. They had Lava Lantula and then they had the sequel, which was Lava to Lantula. Like, I think it was Two Lava to Lantula. And I think
perfect.
Two Diz to Knee would be. But like, you'd have to know that reference to understand that joke.
I love it. I think it's perfect. Yeah. And we were just talking before we start recording that sometimes when we name things stupid things because we find it funny, no one listens to it.
We actually have to, like,
yes.
Quite often we have to like talk ourselves off the ledge of, oh yeah, this is a thing we are trying to get others to listen to. So if we name it something completely bonkers, like they might not find it or know what it is. So we started adding like some caveats to things, especially for our Mimics episode, because we were just going to name it a Horror in the Woods or something like that. And I was like, we should probably put Mimics on it. Like, we should probably give them a little something.
Maybe you just lean into it, right? And you have a place where people can do that, where it can be like forever Disney. And it's an area where like basically you've got fucking cremated sand art of people. You know what I mean?
Cremated sand art of people. Like they take home the little like.
No. Okay. We've talked before that like throw my body in the fucking dumpster. I don't care. And so I sound a little callous when I talk about disposing of once died of natural occurrences, personal remains, right? Because I'm like, I'm not in here, right?
Yeah.
So I say, when I sound cavalier, it's because that's how I feel about my own body, not because that's how I feel about other people's loved ones. I just,
right.
That's not my business. You know, it's kind of how I feel about it. So
yeah.
Unless they make it my business, like if they're like, I'm on a ride and they're like, yay, grandma. Now I'm inhaling grandma and it's a whole problem. But anyway, my idea was that like maybe they have a little place where you can put some ashes and it goes like into something that you could see it go in. So it's not like it goes directly into a trash can that leaves the facilities. But like
right.
You can drop a little bit in. And you can see that your loved one is there. And then you don't have to do this whole, like, frankly, rude situation, right? Because while I can see that you're like, I want to honor this person, this thing that they loved, it is body remains. So maybe we don't just, like, sprinkle those about, right? Most people don't want their child to be, like, walking in human remains. And don't make children walk in human remains. Maybe that's the sign that they should have. It'll be like, Disney forever. Don't make people's children walk in human remains. Welcome to our human sand art. Probably something better than that.
But all like, I think of is those little containers where you put different colors.
Oh, I know. I know exactly what you're thinking of. As I'm saying it, like my mentality before this moment was always just throw my body wherever. I don't care. But now I'm like, you know what? No, I want there to be a party with, I don't know, insert people who have feelings about my death, and they get to make sand art with my ashes, like legit sand art. Like they get one of those little containers and the colored sand and like glitter, maybe tiny trinkets can go in there as well.
Everything's dyed.
Oh, no. Only like my ashes are ash colored so that this way you can see it in there.
Oh, so you have sand. Okay.
Yeah, it's legit sand art.
Like colored sand and then remains.
And this way, there's enough of me to go around. You know what I mean? What a cute way to honor somebody, if with their permission, right? Please make me into sand art.
Has anyone saved a sand art for more than like a week? Do people save those?
I don't think they do, but also urns are depressing.
Don't they mix them up accidentally and then get mad and throw them away? Or is that just
me? I mean, theoretically, but what I'm saying is also, if you end up putting me in a dumpster, I don't care. I'm dead.
You'll be a dump ghost.
Yeah, I'll be a dump ghost. Just kidding. I'm not hanging around my ashes. But my point is that this way, it's like a little thing of joy, right? It's not like an urn, because urns are very sad. I say as a person who has like a shelf of like dead cat ashes.
It's in my office.
But I'm not going to get rid of it because they're my babies. We all have them. But just make me into sand art.
Oh, we're talking about early 1900s, clearly.
Oh my gosh. No, I'm going to start describing like people's style as turn of the century and it be 2000s.
Podcast done. I quit.
Podcast. She out. But that's how they're going to talk about us in the future. Is they're going to say turn of the century clothes.
That's how they talk about us now. Oh my God. My kid had a 90s day at school today.
That hurts. That hurts.
And I was like, I don't know what to put you in. He's like, I don't really care. Right? Like he's just there. And I was like, oh, you know what? You have a Kirby shirt. Kirby is 90s. And he's like, only the one without color. And I was like, what do you mean? We had color
get
in the 90s.
Out of here.
And then my husband has the audacity to say, well, yeah, like Game Boys, the original Game Boys. And I was like, no, we had color.
Right.
Okay.
You're like, I hate Stop that it. You're right. Like my way, Ben is 4 years older than me. So my constant roast of him is like, so like, what was it like when the world was just like in black and white and it wasn't like there wasn't color? Like it's an active joke. And he gets so annoyed with me. Like it's possible. Do you know what I mean? I'm like,
so funny. So funny.
Excuse me, miss.
Thanks for listening. And as always, a special thank you to our patrons who support us via Patreon.
Please see the link in our show notes to learn more about how you, yes you, can begin to haunt the dump, guard vortexes, or even become a scorching Sasquatch.
Ooh. Also in our show notes, you can find the link to our website, more information on our sources, our social media handles, and our merch store.
We'd love for you to keep creeping with us. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the show with your fellow creeps and or ghosts.
I beg of you.